to the Earl Ingram Show, as always. You can join us at 844-967-2789. It's 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. You know, Sandy, you're just getting back from Israel. And here's something that I just do not understand, and maybe you can help me. You know, Joe Biden said he's open to using force against Iran to prevent them from obtaining a nuclear weapon. Now, I think one of the reasons why we are so opposed to Iran having access to nuclear weapons is for fear that they would somehow use them on Israel. But I don't understand, Sandy, why the President of the United States would say he would be open to using force to prevent Iran from gaining access to a nuclear weapon. What kind of crazy talk is that in the world to say those things publicly, that you use force against Iran with all the other nations that have nuclear weapons? Can you pick out one nation and say you can't have it and we're willing to have to use force against you? Does that make any sense to you?
Well, you know, we've talked that same way about North Korea, but we haven't actually been willing to use force. It might be that talking like that is the same as talking about sanctioning China with respect to its transactions with Russia on silicon chips and the like. I do think that in the United States, at least politically, it's almost a political third rail not to talk in the same manner that he's talking now about being willing to use force against Iran, because the feelings about Israel and its safety run so deep in American politics that it's kind of a mandatory position to take. He did, in the same breath, or in the next breath, talk about how he thought diplomacy was the answer, and his administration has talked openly about being very intent on reopening discussions to with Iran to get the settlement that Trump walked away from, the agreement, the Iran nuclear agreement reinstated. So, you know, I kind of think he's talking out of both sides of his mouth there, and my hope is that he's more interested in the diplomatic solution than he is in the force solution.
But clearly they put $100 million that they gave to the Palestinians to deal with hospitals and other things. You just don't get why a president of the United States has to speak like that. There's no reason, no rhyme or reason to talk like that globally and use that kind of verbiage. I just don't know what's to be gained by that.
I think it has more to do with domestic U.S. politics than it does with world politics, quite frankly. And in campaigns within the United States, it's been almost mandatory that politicians talk like that. And so they do.
Yeah. There's no way you're ever going to be able, when you're talking like that, and maybe they're not looking to ever build any kind of relationships with Iran. There's apparently nothing redeeming to our nation with that nation. There's nothing that can, similar to what happens with Cuba. These will always be nations that we'll always vilify. And there's no good that can be derived from a relationship with us and those nations.
I'm not sure. I think that the next generation of State Department folks might take the same view that was taken for a while during the Obama administration, which was that opening up relations with Cuba, for instance, could have a very moderating effect on the political regime within Cuba, as it actually did in China for quite a long time, and as it might have in Russia. And I think there was a view as well that Iran, once it was brought into the world of world commerce and was no longer blockaded from it, would moderate its views on many things, including most probably its views about Israel. So I think that there is another school of thought, but right now the dogma that's required in American politics is this very hawkish approach to dealing with Iran.
You know, Sandy, and then that gets us back to what we were talking about earlier in the week about our Congress again looking to expand, you know, the finances militarily to the Pentagon, and it's this kind of saber rattling that makes people, it's almost like it goes hand in hand, right? I mean, you got to keep the American people alert. We got, you know, there's this threat from Iran, so we can't ever say we need to cut the budget, the military budget, because after all, Iran's trying to get a nuclear weapon, and the American people just buy into all of that.
Well, I mean, you know, the more threats we've got going, the more fronts that we talk about, the more likely it is that the Pentagon requires a massive amount of money. We've got China, we've got Russia, we've got Iran,
North Korea,
threats on all these different fronts, and instead of them mellowing out and becoming less threatening over the last years, apparently our view is that they've all become more threatening. And so if they're more threatening, then what's required is a tougher stance, and half of the way we demonstrate our tougher stance is to spend more money on defense. I talked about this inflationary spiral, but there's also kind of a defense expenditure spiral that relates to our foreign relations and the rate at which we, instead of moving in the direction of detente and peace, move in the direction of tension and saber rattling.
You know, Sandy, historically there have been presidents in our nation who knew that probably at the root of some of these things is, you know, our policies have frightened other nations based on our power. And maybe other nations do what they do based on the fact that they're afraid of what we are going to do. And if you look historically at some of the things that we've done, you would think that those other nations would say, you know, we can't trust that the United States won't do these things that we've seen that they've done historically. So we better prepare ourselves and defend ourselves, but that's never the way it's portrayed in our country. And how right. dare any of us say anything different, right? I mean, if we have the conversation, it's like we're traitors because we're really just telling people exactly what is happening.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at the facts in terms of who's been militarily active in the world, if you look at the facts associated with who's actually used nuclear weapons, if you look at the facts about, you know, the number of wars or police actions, as we've called them, that have been carried out by countries, the United States is way ahead of anyone else in terms of behaving like that. So people, our so-called enemies who talk about that, do have a bunch of facts to point at to demonstrate that our foreign policies frighten them. And so being frightened causes them to act in certain ways, too. And I think I've talked earlier about how, you know, historians will analyze this far better than I can. But there's certainly some level of bona fide fear that resided in Russia with respect to the expansion of NATO and the ways that it was carried out from 1994 until 2014. I think the American people, and you talked about certain presidents that have done a better job of evaluating the reality. Two of those people, quite frankly, are people who I don't otherwise necessarily hold in hugely high esteem, but Dwight Eisenhower was the one who first identified the military-industrial complex and the danger that it posed to the American economy and to American society, and he was dead on, as history would show. And then it was Nixon who opened up relations with China and took an action that had the biggest potential for changing the dynamics in the world towards a more peaceful situation. And of course the wall came down during the period of Reagan. I don't know what all the basis for it. I'm not sure that can the value of that and the credit for that can be given to Reagan. But the fact is that the Democratic Party has kind of traditionally required that it be very hawkish about foreign affairs, I guess, to offset the claim that liberals would be soft on our enemies.
You know, Sandy, I hadn't given it much thought, but I do remember when Richard Nixon was able to break down the walls with China. I remember that well. But I didn't remember that it was a Republican in Richard Nixon all his time until you just said it.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Henry Kissinger, his Secretary of State, was quite a dynamic guy. He had his own view of real politic, was much more pragmatic and less ideological. So we have to remember that when he broke down the walls and the opened up relations with China, he was opening up relations with Mao Zedong, who was, you know, a very strident, ideological communist leader. And so, you know, that same thinking could have opened up the relations with Cuba, and it could have changed things. You know, I think that our opening relations with China had everything to do with China moving away from its Mao Zedong version of communism into something that is much more like Western norms.
And you know, Sandy, historically, people will say kudos to Richard Nixon for that, because look at where China is now. And that could have never happened had Richard Nixon not done what it was he did. Got to go to a break. 844-967-2789. You're tuned into the Earl Ingram Show. It's Friday with Sandy Williams. We'll be back.